Welcome back to the Blooming Basics for ZVM and Linux on System Z Part 1 teleconference. This call is being recorded. Now I'd like to turn the call back over to Julie Liesenfeld. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, John. Welcome back, everyone, or thank you for joining us for our second topic. The next one we will be doing is the basics of using ZVM. The presentation is posted on SSI and Partner World and the ZVM T3 website. If you're on SSI and you're looking for which one, it's the second presentation. You'll see the date of 6-22-10, P1B for the second 2010 T3 Basics of Using ZVM. Our speaker, Brian, will be doing questions at the end, so please jot them down if you have them during his pitch. And, Brian, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. My name is Brian Hogenbrook. I'm a developer here at the ZVM Lab in Endicott, New York. And I'd like to talk to you today about the basics of using ZVM. We'll skip ahead to slide 4, past the legalese, to set the agenda a little bit. What we'll do first is have a quick overview of ZVM. We covered a lot of these concepts in the previous presentation with Bruce, but we'll touch base for those of you who are just joining us. Then we'll talk about some general concepts, talk about using CMS and some of the ins and outs of that and some of the features that come with that. So to start off on slide 5, ZVM contains two basic parts. There's CP, the ZVM control program, and that's the hypervisor portion of ZVM. It's what runs the basics of your system. It's the foundation of it. And then there's CMS, which is it's a special guest user that comes bundled in attached to CP. And CMS, like other guest operating systems, can run on top of your control program. As you can see in the picture, you don't have to be running CMS as inside of a given user. You could be running Linux. You could be running ZOS. You could be running another instance of CP to run a ZVM second level. But CMS is an operating system that comes bundled with. We'll talk about it on slide 6. It stands for Conversational Monitor System. And it's the interactive user interface that runs under the control of CP. It provides a good place to stand, basically, when you're making modifications to your system. It provides an application programming and execution environment. So the issuance of commands, execs, your scripts, text editing, compiling different programs. And there are productivity and vendor aids that are available for running inside of CMS. Some of the strengths of CMS on slide 7 is that it's user-friendly. The command structure is set up to be English-like. It's an extensible command language, and the file system is fairly easy to use, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a couple of slides. And because it's designed to work well with CP, it cooperates, and it will share data with CP. It has specific commands that can exploit CP function and devices. And, in fact, if you issue a command and CMS can't find it, it will pass it down to CP in order to issue the command at the CP level. Because of CMS's shared history with CP, it exploits a lot of virtual machine concepts, and commands will automatically be passed down to CP. And it's designed to be a very high-performance environment, not a lot of overhead, maintains a single user orientation. The file system performance has been fine-tuned. CMS itself, on slide 8, is only one of several environments that you could have inside of a CMS guest. You could also be running in an XEdit environment. XEdit is our text editor program inside of CMS, and we'll cover that in some detail in later slides. And then there's CMS itself, which can be run in either line mode or full screen mode. And you can do the initial program load of CMS or a begin in order to kick CMS off. CMS does have some Unix-like, ZOS-like, or VSE-like simulation. It's not a full duplication of function, but there are some shared similarities to allow for some cross-pollination in that regard. On slide 9, to get to a VM session, point your Telnet client to create a 3270 emulation, personal communicator, for example, or something like Passport, and it will bring you to a VM logo screen. This is where you as a user can provide your user and password or passphrase to log on to an individual guest. You have the option of doing a log on here. If you wish to create the same session of the same user at a different location. For example, if you walk over to another office and need to recreate your session, you can have your logon brought over to another instance and have your previous instance logged off. Or you have the option of logon by, which is signing on using the password of another virtual guest, which allows for the controlling and auditing of resources. You use CP to control your virtual machine. CP is what provides the command to IPL CMS. And there's something called a profile exec, which will help to customize your CMS session, and we'll cover that in some detail. And once you're inside, you can issue the logoff command in order to disconnect. So what we see on slide 10 is the beginning of a simulated demo. What this is a logon screen. It provides places for user IDs and passwords. If you want to issue some basic commands before you log on to the system, you can do that here. But the main point, so you could issue, you could input your user ID and password here, or if you were to hit enter, and you would see on slide 11, it would bring you to a separate prompt. I'm bringing up this display just to point out in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see something that says CP read. This is what's called an execution mode. On slide 12, you'll see a list of these execution modes, and they indicate what status your individual VM session is in. So if that little area happens to display CP read, that means that the control program of the system is waiting for you to issue a command. If you see VM read, that means that the CMS operating system is waiting for a command. If you see running there, that means that it's ready to go and ready to get to work. If you see more, that means that it's trying to present information, but there was just so much information that it ran out of room. There are options that you can set to control just how fast or how slow additional information is displayed. If you see a holding status, that means that you have to manually clear the screen before it will proceed. And finally, not accepted means that you've entered too many commands into the buffer. You've just, you know, hit enter too many times, and you need to wait for the last executed command to complete before proceeding. So we'll see on slide 13 that I've entered in a username and password, and my logon processing has begun inside this demo. We see that I've hit a holding state because of a white message there indicating alerting requiring my attention. So should I hit the clear key on slide 14, it will continue the processing. In my profile exec, which we'll look at in just several slides, we'll see that I put in a hard stop to prompt anyone at my keyboard to hit enter before continuing. So you'll see that this status is in VM read, waiting for that manual CMS command to be entered. And then once that's done, on slide 15, you'll see that a little bit of logon information is displayed. This is tailorable in your profile exec, and we're now at a running status and ready to go. On slide 16, CMS commands. CMS is all set up to create, modify, and debug anything that's running on your system. There are a lot of different language processors and compilers that can run under CMS. Commands inside of CMS are blank, delimited, one, a space in between individual parameters, and input will be accepted in any case. What CMS does is that it will automatically uppercase and pass any commands over to the command parser. The general syntax for this on slide 17, you'll start with a command name with additional operands following that. Some commands may have options available, and you would have an open parenthesis, the left-hand parenthesis, specified in order to indicate that the operands have stopped and the options have begun. So when we look at the examples in the middle of the slide, we see that a copy command can specify a file name, type, and mode, whereas list file, you may wish to specify the option of having the date listed along with your list file. And some commands don't require any operands or options at all. And you can use a specific command, set DOS on, to simulate a VSE environment. The command search order inside of CMS on slide 18 is that Once input is entered, CMS will go look to see what it should be doing. The first thing it will check to see is if there is an exec on one of the access disks or directories which should be executed. An exec is a script file, and we'll talk about execs in the Rex language later on in this presentation. If it doesn't find an exec, it'll look for a translation or a synonym. We'll talk about that as well later. It'll search for a module with the specified command name, any of these built programs or Nucleus extensions that it can execute. But if the command is not found in CMS, it will be passed down to CP for execution. There are settings, set implied command, implied CP, which can be turned on or off. By default, these are, of course, turned on because we want the two CMS and CP to be within communication with each other. CMS has some immediate commands on slide 19, and these can be entered while another command is running. They interrupt the running command, and they take place absolutely immediately. It's the equivalent of hitting like Control-C or Control-X in Linux or Windows-oriented environments. There are 10 system immediate commands listed on slide 19. I highlight two of them, HT and HX, which are halt, which deal with the halting of execution and programs which are running. So again, that Control-X comparison. And if these aren't to taste, these they can be user-defined if you wanted to build macros or commands and have them inserted into the nucleus. So we see on slide 20 the issuing of a basic file list command. The two asterisks just say any file name and any file type and of a specific file mode. We'll talk about each of those in turn later on. On slide 21, we see the result of issuing that command. We see what's listed on this user ID's A disk. On slide 22, we would see what would be issued if what would be seen if we issued a reader list command. This is the reader list is the data stored in spool. We'll talk about that as well. And on slide 23, we issue a command called forever, which has the like the name implies, just runs forever. We see that it immediately goes into a more status because we haven't hit forever yet. We see that on this slide, I'm in the process of typing out the HX halt execution immediate command. On slide 24, we see that halt execution has taken place and put the machine into VM read. That means that CMS is still waiting for a little bit more information. On slide 25, we hit V for begin, and we're back into a running mode. On slide 26, we've touched upon the file system a little bit already. But CMS files are fairly unique, and they're not necessarily interchangeable with other operating systems. And how they're constructed is they have a specific form of file ID that consists of three fields, the file name, the file type, which is your, be it a script or exec or module, indicating what it is that the file is meant to do, and the file mode or the directory name. And that indicates where this particular file is stored. A file mode in CMS can be the letters A through Z, and they indicate the mini disk or the directory where this information resides. File modes can have an additional number signifier attached to them as well, assigned when the file is created or renamed. By default, it's 1, and it helps to distinguish who can see what sort of information has your if multiple people are accessing the same user space. On slide 27, we see that files can be stored in several ways. The most immediate one is on mini disks. And there are some standard file modes which come by default with VM. A is generally a user's your scratch mini disk, the equivalent of the home directory in Linux, for example. The S is generally considered the system disk, and Y file mode is a list of installed programs. Information could also be stored in an SFS, which is a shared file system file space. We'll display that in just a few slides. It can be stored inside of a byte file system, which is a more hierarchical file structure like a Linux or a old MS-DOS structure would appear. Or it can also reside inside of an NFS as well. So we see on slide 28 that I've issued a command to query disk. And this brings up all the file modes that this particular user has accessed. And we see that this user has been pretty busy. Now, if we go to slide 29, we see an example of SFS file space. This is a particular file pool. We see that there's a username associated with the file pool and then subdirectories attached onto that whereupon some information can be stored. If one were to do a file list on one of those directories, you would see information that looks a lot like the file list on mini disk A from earlier in the presentation. So on slide 30, we present the virtual machine. We've logged on to one, but we haven't really talked about where it comes from, what defines it, what its capabilities are. And the answer to this is it's defined in something called the user directory. The user directory is a flat file that's stored and associated with CP, and it defines all the virtual machines on the system. It handles things like the control of access to mini disks. Establishes privileged classes for determining who can issue what commands, and can actually be used to attach other devices or issue startup commands as a user is logging on. So we see on slide 31 a very sample, pared-down sample user directory. We see that this user is fairly small. It's only a 16-meg user. It's only got a class G authority, which means it's a general user. And we see that it's running with a specific machine type of XA. And on startup, we see that it's meant to IPL CMS. That means that as we log on, CMS will be brought online automatically. This isn't required in the directory. You could also provide a device where a Linux guest would reside and have Linux brought up automatically. Skipping down to slide 32, we change the focus a little bit, and we see console and spool devices established. And what spool devices are, these are your, on slide 33, reader, print, and punch devices that are simulated devices. We don't use punch cards or the readers very often in the real world anymore, but the simulated support is still there, and it's very useful for intra-guest communication. And so all of your guests, your virtual machines will have this information associated with them. Changing focus a little bit on slide 34, we see a lot of link statements. And this is a list of attaches to make to various disks, not necessarily owned by this user, but it establishes the location and the virtual device addresses for these guests so that this particular user, IBM user, can access this information. According to these particular statements, it can only access most of this information in read-only mode. And at the bottom, we see that a 191 disk is being defined on a 3390 type of DASNY. And it has passwords associated with it, read, write, and multiple. And this is the statement which defines that user scratch space we mentioned earlier. So this CMS user will automatically link the 191 mini disk we see on slide 35, and it's accessed at file mode A by default. To talk a little bit more about mini disks on slide 36, mini disks are a location on real DASD that's been allocated for the storage of files. They're generally speaking not entire full pack mini disks. They're the carved out sub pieces, and they are defined as a part of the user directory. There are three types of mini disks. The first one is the permanent. These are the ones specifically defined in the user directory, and they last across all of your sessions, your various log-ons and log-offs. You have the option to create temporary disks, T-disks, and these are destroyed at log-off time. And there's a CP command called define, which can handle the creation of these T-disks, which do take up actual DASD. The alternative to that is a VDisk, a virtual disk, which is not actually allocated on DASD, but instead a part of memory. And it's a temporary simulation of a mini disk inside of system storage. It avoids some of the IO overhead associated with real DASD work. And again, the virtual disks are also destroyed at log-off time. VDisk space is defined in the system config file, and that file is something that will be talked about in more detail in the next presentation. So we see on slide 37 a few different mini-disk-oriented commands. Define is one that defines a virtual device or a virtual disk inside of storage. And there's an example of this there. We define a T3390 type of DASD, add a virtual device address 291, and we make it 10 cylinders large. There's a CP link command, which allows one to connect to other users' mini disks in order to share files. And once a device is linked, it can then be accessed at a particular file mode. And here we see an example of accessing a 291 at a file mode of C. Something to note is that mini disks must be formatted before using them for the first time. And there is an associated format command as well. On slide 38, we see a couple more commands. Release, once we're done with the disk, we can release a particular file mode. If we, not necessarily because we're going to be getting rid of that particular disk, but because there are only 26 file modes and we may need to shuffle around just what we're working on. The detach command, conversely, allows you to remove the device entirely from your VM configuration, and this will detach the actual virtual device, and detach is also available as an option on the release command so that you can do both in one step. There is a CP query command called query DASD, which will show you what you have linked. There's also a query accessed, a query disk, and a query search, which will show you various status information associated with these disks and directories. And a while back, we were issuing the list file and file list commands, and they list specifically the files that are on any given access mini disk or directory. So we see on slide 39 a little bit of output. We see that in this case, this user has issued the query access command, and we see the list slightly different from your query disk output, showing the file modes accessed, the state that they're in, the number of files associated in virtual devices, along with labels. We've decided that we're done with the D file mode in the associated disk. So we issue a release D and then detach the virtual device associated with that, and we see that DASD 292, which in this case I happen to know is a VDisk, has been detached. On the next slide, we see a query disk has been issued, and the D file mode is no longer there. Then you could issue all of those commands that I listed on the previous set of slides, or you can combine them all into a script. Hereupon, I issue a VDisk script, and we see that I'm defining some T-disk space, automatically formatting it and setting it up so that when we skip to slide 41 and issue query disk again, we see that at file mode C, a new disk with a new virtual device has been created. Of course, on slide 42, we see that just because you can issue a command doesn't mean that you should. Here, we try to link to somebody else's 191 scratch space at a particular virtual device address, and we see that this command has been rejected because of all those passwords in the user directory. The right one was not available, and authority was not granted. Slide 43. Once we're in the user space, inside of our virtual guest, we can start developing programs. These could be large complex tasks or simple scripts just to help us with our day-to-day work. Creating and compiling, we use a program called XEdit to create programs. It's a basic text editor. You assign your file types inside of a CMS based upon the programming language that you're using. Invoke the compiler by typing the compiler name followed by the file name of the program. And here's just a quick example of a listing and text files produced as a result. On slide 44, we start to see a little bit more about XEdit. In order to invoke XEdit, the command is XEdit, and you can specify a file name, type, and mode if one exists. If one doesn't, it'll set up the one to be created for you. Each line in XEdit is a record, and the default layout of the screen is up on slide 44. We see that we have a basic current line, a data area where we're actually writing programs, a scale to measure just how many characters if you're taking note of just how long your records are, a command line for the issuing of XEdit-related commands, and a prefix area for the manipulation of data. On slide 45, we see these commands touched on in a little bit more detail. You can issue M and C to move and copy a single line, MM or CC to indicate blocks of text to move or copy, and you can specify destinations for these by using F and P for following and proceeding, and you have the option of adding in lines, deleting, and repeating commands. And there are command line commands on slide 46, which can be issued inside of XEdit. You can change the format of the screen. You can change basic bits of text from a string of X's, for example, to a string of Y's. You can find all instances of a particular string inside of a text, either just one at a time or displaying all of them at once. Once you're done in XEdit, you can exit the program one of three ways. You can either leave and not save the changes by issuing qquit. You can leave and save changes by issuing a file. Or if you just want to save and you're not quite done yet, but you've made a lot of good progress, you can just type in save, and that will save your data on your specified mini disk. XEdit is very tailorable. You have the option to write your own XEdit commands. These are files sitting on your disks with the file type of XEdit and the file name of your command, and you can write these out using Rex or pipelines. XEdit has a specific number of default program function keys, and the list of these is on slide 48. Fairly straightforward in your scrolling, tabbing, help access, and moving left to right in larger files. There is a file called profile.xedit on slide 49, and this is run when xedit is invoked. And what this does is it allows you to tailor the xedit environment. So there were a lot of different features listed a few slides ago on the default xedit environment. Here we're making a number of different changes. We're changing the verify level, setting numbers on, setting the prefix area to null, making so that we can accept mixed case, changing the current line, turning off the save, and one that I'm personally fond of is autosave one, which will cause your file to be saved in a temporary file every single minute if you haven't been actively saving it, just because I get a little paranoid when I'm doing my work. So we see on slide 50, this user has done file lists to check out the profiles XEdit, which are available to it. And we see one is sitting on the 191 disk. It's not the default. It's had a few modifications made. On slide 51, we see many of the same features that we saw a couple slides ago as we peek inside this profile XEdit. We do also see that we've made a couple of color changes just so we're not bombarded by a wall of green. And so on slide 52, what used to be the default setting has changed quite significantly. We've seen that the current line has changed. There's no scale anymore. The data area is still in place, but the prefix area has been replaced with line numbers and none of the equal signs, making it a little bit easier to type. On slide 53, we see that a couple of more things that you can add to a profile XEdit. If you're more familiar with ISPF, you can set prefix synonyms. And what this will do is it'll allow you to change these XEdit prefix commands to something which you may be more familiar with. So if you're more used to using BNA instead of PNF for previous and following when moving text around, you can set these commands inside your profile XEdit and make it so that a quick mistype, if you're if you have one of those moments where you can't remember just what environment you're working in, you'll it'll be processed just like in your normal VM-oriented command. On slide 54, we start talking about recs and execs. We've mentioned these a couple times. And these are basic scripting files. Recs is a language, if you're not familiar, is an IBM-created language. It's about 30 years old. It's I like to think of it as what would happen if your pseudocode actually compiled and ran. A couple quick notes on recs is that it always starts with a comment delimited by the slash and the asterisk. And it has a lot of your higher language basic support. It allows for variables and stemmed arrays. Will store, and it manipulates data by considering all data as strings, and then will organize data based upon how it's used. So if you start doing math upon a particular variable, it will assume it to be an integer. It has your basic flow control to allow for if-thens, else's, select, and case statements, do-whiles, for loops. Will allow you to code in for functions and procedures, both internal to a given exec or external, or one of the 70-something built-in functions inside of the Rex language. Rex allows for pipelines, which is a staged scripting environment, which allows you to manipulate data very, very quickly. You can also use Rex and these execs to issue CP and CMS commands. On slide 55, we talk about the profile exec. The profile exec is a very special exec, and it's what runs when you first sign on to your user. After all the processing for your user directory statement has gone forward and your virtual machine has been created to the static configuration statements based in this directory, you can use the profile exec to tailor and configure what your virtual machine may be doing and to issue commands at the startup of your virtual machine. So we see on slide 56 an example of a profile exec. We see first off that this user sets some synonyms, not just for XEdit, but for basic commands. We'll talk about that in a couple of slides. We see that this user is changing the screen output. It's changing how line editing and retrieving is handled. It actually manages to run a couple of execs inside of this exec. In this case, the PFSet exec is something that reconfigures the PF keys to something more tailorable to this user. On the next slide, we see a line 21 that hit enter to continue, which came up right at the beginning of this presentation. And then we see that at startup, a lot of information is being issued out to the console. It queries the CP level, the CMS level. All this information is printed out as the user is starting up to help someone logging on get a feel for just what this environment is that you're logging into. On slide 58, we see the synonym file. And much like the XEdit version, this allows you to specify CMS commands that you may wish to abbreviate or change entirely. So if you want to condense the discard command down to DIS, you can do that. Or if you're used to working in a Linux environment and you want to change files to LS and rename to MV, you can do that as well. And this is loaded on startup so that if you were to do an LS on asterisk file mode A, for example, you would see that same output that came up right at the start of this presentation. On slide 59, we see an exec that creates a T-disk. This is another exec that was issued over the course of the presentation. We see that a cpdefine command is issued for a virtual device address of 292. It's only one cylinder. It doesn't have a lot to do. It formats the 292 as D. And what it does is that it uses a program stack to store up a string of commands. The define command will be looking for, the format command will be looking for several different prompts for input for a disk name and for a yes and no query and response. And so you can actually query up a sequence of responses inside of your execs in order to bypass a lot of the manual intervention that might be required. And on slide 60, we show a very quick the example of the forever exec that all it did was run forever, and all it does is will provide that one line of output forever unless interrupted, because there's nothing inside of its internal logic to stop it. So as you're moving through your virtual guest, you may want to have need for some debugging aids. And one of the first things that I do is I start recording my console. On slide 61, we see the commands that are associated with this. And what this will do is it'll keep track of all the CMS-oriented commands that are being issued inside your console and spool them accordingly. You issue the command to start. Once you're done, you issue the command to stop and close this particular spool. And it will punch this information out to your reader, that simulated device mentioned earlier. So if you were to do a query reader all or a reader list, you would see that this spool ID information would come up. You could do a peek on the spool ID in order to look at that information directly, or you could do a receive on the spool ID to a particular file name, type, and mode in order to receive that data onto a particular disk for storage and later use. Something that may have been glossed over pretty quickly was that in the profile exec for this user, we set it up so that the command to start spooling was included in profile. So right on startup, we start spooling. At any time, we can stop spooling. And so we see on slide 62 that this user has done precisely that. We see the reader file has been sent over to its reader list. We issue the reader list, and on slide 63, we see at the bottom there a new file of 151 records, which wasn't there before. And if we were to open it up, we would see on slides 64 and for a couple thereafter, all of the input, which we had been seeing over the course of this simulated demo. We see the exec that ran forever. We issue the HX command, the query three disks. The issuing of profile exec commands and exec commands, and the command, of course, to stop spooling the console. Note that this won't actually keep track of anything that's happening in Xedit, because Xedit is considered a different environment, so it's not necessarily tied to the same console output. On slide 66, we see that tracing is also available. They talked about this very briefly in the previous presentation, but you can trace an instruction, trace I, by specifying a particular address or location and a specific number of bytes. So if you're running something inside of a very particular place inside of a storage, you can step along your program to see just how it's behaving. You can issue a display G in order to display the current contents of the general registers. You can issue a display T to display the translated storage for a given number of bytes from a starting point. You use B to begin execution. We saw that way back in the beginning of the presentation when we were coming out of the Forever Exec. And trace end in order to stop tracing entirely. And should you need something a little bit more broad in scope, you can issue the VM dump command in order to grab a larger collection of data concerning the whole of the virtual machine. And there's something called the VM dump tool, which you can use to siphon through all the information that comes off of a VM dump to find out just where in a virtual machine something may have gone amiss. There are also help facilities available. On slide 67, we see that there is a help command available for all the CMS and CP commands. You can also issue help against particular message numbers should something pop up on your console that looks unfamiliar. The help information is linked to a particular disk. So as long as you've linked to that particular disk, either dynamically or statically through your user directory, you should be able to issue help commands like the one on 68. If one were to do a help link, we see basic information come up about the general purpose, the format of the command, possible operands, and options. Now, at the bottom, we see there's a list of PF commands, which can help guide you through further help information. So if we were to hit PF1 for all, we would see on slide 69 that the full diagram of the link command is presented, along with all of its options, be they required or optional, along with notes, notes on authorization. It would go on for pages and pages, not quite a man pages extensive, but still enough to see a lot of curiosity. And that brings me to slide 70 and the end of my prepared remarks. This is just a quick list of virtual resources for gathering information about VM. There's a lot of information inside the library about the how-tos of getting into using VM guests. And so I would encourage you to look at these different links, talk to mailing lists if you're not already on such. And at this point, I'll turn it over to John to look into questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. And once again, we'll pause for just a brief moment to assemble the queue. At this time, it appears we have no questions.
Brian, thank you very much. John, I think for us to stay on schedule, we're going to end up taking a 15-minute break, so we start at the top of the hour since that's what everyone's agenda has.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are taking a 15-minute break. Please do continue to stay on the line. We will be back in 15 minutes.